Welcome to the Revitalize My Church podcast, created to help churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. Here's the host of the show, Bart Blair.
Welcome to the Revitalize My Church podcast. My name is Bart Blair. I'm the director of church revitalization for a ministry called Assist Church Expansion. And we've been producing this podcast since the summer of 2024, just a little bit over a year, with the purpose of helping churches navigate change and finding their way to a new and fruitful future. If your church is perhaps stuck, stagnant, or in decline, you're a pastor, church leader, elder, or just concerned member of your church, we hope that the content that we're producing in this podcast will be helpful for you. Maybe your church doesn't fit into any of those categories. You're just a pastor looking for some direction on how to help your church be healthier and make a greater impact in the community. Make sure that you check out our website, revitalizemy.church. In addition to the podcast, we also have some articles and some other resources there that you might find useful and helpful as you lead your church into the future. I'm really excited to share with you this particular episode. It's an interview with a friend of mine named Mary Ann Sibley. Mary Ann and I met a few years ago for the very first time, hung out together at a conference in Nashville, had the opportunity to interview her on a different podcast that I co-host from time to time. And I just think she has a wonderful story of how she came to faith and how the Lord led her into a life of ministry. And just her heart for the local church and the way that she thinks is the way I think a lot of us need to think. As pastors and church leaders, we can sometimes forget that there are people that we're trying to reach who've never actually been to church before. And their perspective of church is often very, very different than ours. The things that that are intimidating to them, the questions that they might be asking, sometimes we take for granted the fact that we've been in church for maybe a long time and we don't think the way that they think. And Mary Ann, I think, comes from a great background, great perspective, and she's going to help us and challenge us on how we can think the way that outsiders might think. One of the other things that I think is timely for this particular episode is that if you listen to our podcast regularly, the last episode that was released at the beginning of this month, Nathan Bryant and I had a conversation that was partly on the topic of joyful hospitality in the local church, especially as an essential for church revitalization. So if you didn't listen to that episode, make sure that you go back and listen to episode 27. And just a reminder that if you haven't subscribed wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, be sure that you do that so that you don't miss any of our future episodes. We release on the 1st and the 15th of every month, which I know is a little bit awkward and hard to remember, but if you subscribe, you don't have to remember. Those episodes will be delivered to your mobile device, to your favorite podcasting app, and there they will be for you on your commute to work or your ride on the lawnmower or your workout at the gym or wherever it is that you happen to be consuming this content. Anyway, that's all I got as far as an intro is concerned. Thanks again for tuning in to the 28th episode of the Revitalize My Church podcast. And here's my discussion with Mary Ann Sibley. Mary Ann Sibley, thank you so much for being a guest on the Revitalize My Church podcast. You and I have had some opportunities to connect in the past, in person and on another podcast, and just so grateful that you were willing to make the time with me today, and hopefully we're going to be able to share some amazing stuff with our audience.
Hopefully. Thank you, Bart, for the invitation.
Yeah.
It's an honor to be here. Yeah, love seeing you again.
Absolutely. Why don't we start, Mary Ann? Like, I know your story because I've heard it a few times now, and it's a pretty powerful story. I'd love for you to just kind of share your background, share your journey of faith, connection in the church, and then how you ended up in ministry doing what you're doing today.
Okay, let's see if I can do a highlighted synopsis. The first thing is for people to know is that I did not grow up in church. I actually grew up Buddhist. And so I kind of joke now and tell people back when I was a heathen Buddhist, and they have to understand I'm no longer a Christ follower, but I grew up in the South and really had only bad to non-experience with church people. So by the time I was in my 40s, a single mom, struggling with depression, one suicide attempt, I remember always thinking about church people were people that I was sure I was not going to like. And I was sure they were not going to like me either. So I decided, let's just never meet. Now, saying that, it's not as though I had invitations. Like, nobody invited me to church, and I live in the South, until I was 40. And so finally, a family, after my divorce, being a single mom, we moved to a new neighborhood. And there was a family that had started a new church that lived right behind us. And I remember thinking they were like a cult because they were meeting at a school. There was maybe like 20 or 30 of them. And, you know, I seen church buildings everywhere. And I thought, that's weird. That must be a cult. And they had boys that my boys wanted to play with. So I was super wary. I was like, I don't think I'm going to let that happen. So for 2 years, this family invited me to their church. And I said no for 2 years. But what this family also did was they loved me where I was. They never preached at me. They didn't leave any verses on my doorstep. They just said, we love you, Marianne. Come over for dinner. You know, we'll take your boys on outings and things. So through that, it's like, if you love my kids, you get my attention. So God was doing his part, which he was breaking the walls down in my heart. Well, they were just loving me. They were just doing their part. A lot of times I hear people say, so what's the 1, 2, 3 on how to reach my neighbor that's a Buddhist? And I'm like, there is no 1, 2, 3. You're called to just love people, like the Bible says. So after 2 years, my boys were starting to get interested. So because I thought this was a cult, I thought, you know, I need to check this church out. I need to make sure it's not a cult, because if it is, then we're going to cut off all communication. Well, of course, it wasn't a cult. And my very first time, I'll never forget, driving into church. This was a tiny, tiny church at the time, maybe 100 people-ish, maybe. Tiny parking lot. I, meanwhile, have a banking background. I've lent millions of dollars in commercial lending. I then left and I was the CFO of an international company. So I seem pretty competent in the area of business and corporate America, but I'm driving into church and I thought I was going to throw up. And my friends always laugh and I'm like, no, I literally was so nervous. I thought, okay, I'm not going to like them. They're going to judge me. They're going to see that I'm a single mom and they're going to wonder, oh, what'd she do? And, you know, just all those insecurities. And so I pulled in and I remember being in such a small lot. I thought, well, there's no place to park. Great. We're out of here. We're going to go to McDonald's and get breakfast. But there is one guy in the parking lot. His name is Jeff. I'll never forget him. He had an orange vest on and he saw me. He waved, smiled, and then he said, here, come with me. I'll show you where to park. And he literally, Bart, walked my car to the one parking spot up front. And I thought, oh my gosh, now I have to get out of my car. So I parked, and it was though God just put people in strategic places that said, okay, get her parked. Okay, now get her down the sidewalk. Okay, now get her seated. Like just those baby steps that made it safe for me to go, okay, I'm going to continue walking, because I'm that girl that has no problem turning and leaving if I ever felt like I was being judged or there was a bad situation. And so I remember sitting there and I would go back for about a month and a half every year, the weekend when I had my boys, because I was going for them. So I was still monitoring them. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go every other weekend. And then there was one weekend where I didn't have the boys and I had a crazy idea to go to church on my own, which is crazy thought at the time. And everything about the story and more, Bart, to this day, I see how God planted deeply in me some basic principles of the gospel and its love and acceptance for people. Because growing up military and in corporate, like if you were on time, you were late. So I was really judgmental about all that time. And so when I woke up that Sunday morning, decided I'd go by myself, I was late. And I thought, oh, I'm not going. You know, the Holy Spirit's like, just go. Like something, I don't know. I didn't know it was the Holy Spirit then, but something kept saying, just go, just go. And when I walked in, everyone was standing up already. And again, we're looking at maybe 50, 75 adults in the room, not very big. And I walked up to the door and I saw that people were standing and singing and I went, nope. And I turned around to leave. I said, that is too intimidating. I'm not walking in there. What was I thinking? And a gentleman, volunteer, followed me and said, excuse me, is everything all right? And I was like, it's fine. Like, it's crowded. It's fine. And he said, oh, we have room. He goes, would it be okay if I go in there and find you a seat and then I'll come back and get you? I mean, I could have said no, but I didn't. I was like, oh, okay. And so that's what he did. He found me a seat. He came back. He walked me to the seat. So as I'm walking in front of these people, it was though not me trying to do something. I'm like, I'm just following this guy. Like, apparently y'all know him. And he put me in a seat. And I'm telling you, 2 days later, I met Jesus. Like that service, it was like, God's like, I don't want you to come in and talk to people. I just want you to come in and hear the message. Like, it's okay that you're late. And then later, as I was leading volunteers, it really taught me when people are coming late, we don't know what's going on. We're not going to judge them. We're going to open up our arms and be ready to welcome them no matter when they come in. And so all those things. And after meeting Jesus, of course, everything changes. And about a year later, they asked me to come on staff because they were building a new building. So that was really my first job because of my finance background was to oversee this building that was 90,000 square feet. So I'm like, oh, that's businessy. I can do that. And so that was a 4 or 5 year project. And when that was over, they were like, you can do anything. I'm like, well, I'm going back to corporate America. Because even though I know Jesus, I don't really do church. Like, I don't understand what you say. And I said, but y'all going to need about 100 volunteers tomorrow because this place is crazy. Nobody knows where to go. And they go, that's your new job. And so that started the whole thing of trying to figure out, not having any church background, what does this look like? And I got to see the church grow from that tiny little church to we grew on a Sunday, we're 5,000-6,000 people starting to attend. We had more campuses launched. It was ridiculous. And I got a front row seat to that. And then in 2014, moved to South Carolina and started helping other churches with this. It's just been such a privilege and an honor to take what God has done in my life and showed me and say, oh, wow, this is possible everywhere.
It's an amazing story. And I love it every time. And that was probably the shortest version I've ever heard of it. I've heard a lot more details. So that was really good. Thanks for sharing that. Paint a picture of the landscape of what you're doing now from South Carolina. What does ministry look like for you as you're helping other churches and coaching other churches?
Well, it's a combination of things. I do a lot of on-site visits because a lot of us, just like our homes, we're nose blind as to what really is happening. And so I love going into church spaces and not necessarily secretive because it doesn't have to be a secret because human beings are human beings. They're going to do what they always do regardless. But I love to talk and ask questions with staff and volunteers and really give some fresh eyes to, hey, this is really good. Have you noticed? And here's some areas to improve. So I love doing that. I do a lot of group coaching with teams. I work with children's ministry, volunteer leaders, that sort of thing. And then specifically hospitality, first impression, teams, church teams, leaders, one-on-one coaching. Okay. So all of that.
Well, that's very helpful. And I brought you onto the show today to talk kind of big picture about building volunteer teams. But I know that your heart and a lot of your expertise is in sort of that hospitality first impressions. And I think a lot of it obviously stems from your first time church experiences. And I think that, you know, that's that it made a huge impact for you having great people greet you in the parking lot and at the door and help you there. And I think that's probably why your heart beat so hard for that. I set the context for this conversation before you and I started recording, saying that really the vast majority of church leaders or pastors that are listening to this podcast are churches that have been perhaps stuck or in decline. They are taking steps to move their churches towards better health, more fruitful ministry. When you think about how a church can leverage volunteer teams, and if you want to lean specifically into first impressions and hospitality, we can. But how do you think implementing strategies with volunteer teams and first impressions and hospitality can help a stuck or declining church move towards being healthier?
Okay, let's see if I can shorten this for you, Bart.
Okay.
I think this really boils down to this is a discipleship opportunity with our volunteers. So too many times we look at volunteers and we see them as a a line on a worksheet or a post like, oh, we need someone to do this, someone to do that. And they're forgetting this very person who's raised their hand to volunteer is someone going through something or has questions or maybe has some incredible opportunity and potential. And we're not taking advantage of that and really pouring into them. So this goes back to Ephesians where it says, we're called to equip the saints. And we equip them so that like they grow in to know who the Lord is. And there's nothing like having people exercise their faith walk on a Sunday in real time through serving. Mm-hmm. So I kind of think of it like a gymnasium. Like we go to a gym to get stronger. And for me, I love to work out because I have grandkids and I need to be able to pick them up. So working out in the gym allows me when I'm with them to pick them up easily. So on Sunday, when we have what I call real teams, not just pools of people, we're really being intentional with how we're pouring into them, discipling them on Sunday so they can make mistakes. They can learn about prayer. We take whatever the message is and we apply it to when they are serving. Then when they're out in their community and their neighborhoods, God reminds them, oh, remember what happened on Sunday? And you actually pray for that person, you could do it now. You didn't die when you did that on Sunday. You said you would never do that. And so we really are building up their spiritual muscles, so to speak. And you know, when you have a group of people that are growing, like not just hearing the words, but being the doers of the words, and then they take that out to their community, that only strengthens our local churches, right?
Right. So essentially what you're saying is healthier disciples lead to having healthier churches. I mean, that's pretty much in a nutshell. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing new here.
Yeah. But at the same time, I think a lot of pastors feel pressure, especially churches that have been a little more traditional in their long-term ministry model, where church really is, it's a Sunday, it's predominantly limited to kind of a Sunday morning experience, probably a Sunday school, and then a worship service, and then perhaps a Wednesday night prayer meeting or something of that nature. And so I think that's probably it's a deficiency. I think if we look at, you know, the local church over the last 30 or 40 years, at a lot of churches that were in that traditional ministry model, the pastor did most of the work. The pastor was the one facilitating most things. And there wasn't a premium placed on empowering people to serve in a variety of ministries. We would certainly, maybe we have elders, maybe we have deacons, perhaps we have some Sunday school volunteers or nursery volunteers, and maybe a musician or two that, you know, plays the piano or the organ and leads our music, leads our worship. But I think you're talking about really looking at the church body as a whole and saying, you know, how do we mobilize all believers who are part of our church family to do something? How do you go about as a pastor or as a church leader? How would I go about even sort of starting to introduce that concept to maybe a church family that is traditionally seeing themselves as coming to service to be served rather than to serve? Like what's the shift that I need to make culturally? How do I start that conversation?
Yeah. I think one of the basic principles is you don't need a lot. One of my favorite words in the Bible is remnant. And we just need a remnant. We just need a few, and that catches fire and that spreads. So I think a lot of times we feel like we got to get a big group together and we got to create this whole movement. And yet you think about Jesus, he started with the few disciples and grew from there, right? So for me, when I think back, how did this get started? I just pulled in like 3 or 4 people and started asking them questions. I think we forget that the people coming or currently serving actually have ideas and thoughts and concerns, but they don't believe they have a voice. And when we can truly say, and literally, Bart, I'm going to get real practical here. Like I put them in a room and I got myself a notebook and I asked some really simple questions. I'm like, what do you love about serving at this church and what's really hard? Go. And they talked, not me. And it's always better to do that. A lot of church leaders will have one-on-one conversations, which is fine. I said, there's something powerful about doing this in a group and a team because you're starting the culture of saying, hey, you have a voice and we all can have different opinions, but we're going to have some non-negotiables of what it means to love Christ in this church. So we're going to be honoring in love. So it doesn't become a complaint session. I think a lot of people are afraid of that. But I think when you pick the right people and you only need a few, and you ask them first, what's really good? What do you need? How can I better serve you? Because here's the mission, right? That's what we're supposed to do as leaders. We take people and we show them that this is where we want to go, and they may have just forgotten. I think a lot of times when I talk with church leaders, they're incredible people, but they forgot because they got bogged down with the tasks. Mm-hmm. And so we need a constant reminder. So that's the first thing, is that you really need to dig in and not be afraid to hear what your current people are doing. And if you open the door for them and say, okay, how could we make it better? Like imagine someone coming to our church. When was the last time someone came to our church for the first time? When was the last time you felt like you could invite someone from your neighborhood or your family member or a workmate? And I'll be honest, Bart, I talked with some groups of church leaders in a church, and a lot of them can't give me an answer. They're great people. And I look at them and I'm like, one person. They don't even have to live here. Let's say they live in Alaska. Who is that person? Because we have to make it, for me, I believe, really personal and real before it really matters to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, I get it. We're supposed to love people. Yeah, we're a welcoming church. But it's like, well, let's just boil that down and really think about your person. And how would you want them to be loved into the kingdom and received and accepted? And are we doing it? And how could we do better? And then you just start. Like just with those few people.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about hospitality. I'm a firm believer that great hospitality can cover a multitude of sins. And I use this as an example. My wife and I love having friends and neighbors over for meals. I love to cook. I love to smoke meat, grill food. And I love to serve people when they come to my home. On more than one occasion, we've invited people over and the food didn't turn out the way I wanted or hoped. And in my mind, the experience was kind of a dud because the food itself didn't quite meet my expectations. It didn't hit the mark. Yet, everybody that we invite will always come back over a second time, even if the food didn't always hit the mark, because we extended great hospitality. And a lot of churches that are smaller or in decline or stuck, their first thing they'll admit is, well, we don't have great music on Sunday. It's tough, right? It's a little rough around the edges. And like I'm thinking one church and actually multiple churches that, you know, they're using YouTube videos on a Sunday morning because that's all they got. They don't have musicians. Yeah. The pastor is maybe growing and learning how to preach. He hasn't been preaching for very long and is still honing that skill. And so maybe his sermons aren't, you know, they're not as good as the ones that you could find on YouTube if you wanted to go and listen to the best communicators. But I believe that if we can have an incredibly hospitable environment and experience on a Sunday morning, that great hospitality can cover some of those sins of not having the best music or not having the best sermons or not having the best children's ministry or what people might be expecting. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit about some of the low-hanging fruit that a church that's never really had a first impressions or hospitality ministry, they've never really thought about that beyond just a couple of greeters who are at the door and hand out bulletins when people come in and pass the offering plate during the offering time. What can I do to start inviting people to be a part of a volunteer team for hospitality or first impressions? What kind of roles should I create? How can I get that kicked off to kind of improve the hospitality in my church?
Yeah. I 100% agree with you, Bart. Hospitality does cover a multitude of sins. I've been to very fancy places, fancy churches, and we were church looking when we moved. We had to find a church, and it was either non-existent or so rude. I was like, no, I don't care about all that. I'm not going back there, because there's a direct link to that back to some church leadership. Like, if this is how they feel about people, it's being displayed by someone in the parking lot, not being in the parking lot. And then I saw a random guy and I'm like, don't know what door to go in. And my husband's like, oh boy, here we go. And I'm like, we don't know what door to go. So I yell, hey, what door? And he yells, I don't know. You could try that one, I guess. And I went, versus someone, and this was huge, huge church. And it's like, I think when you think about our world today, people are hungry for connection. People are hungry to be seen. And we can't forget the God factor. You know, when God, I would tell our volunteers, you know, it says he scans the earth to and fro looking for faithful. I said, I want to be found faithful if one person comes to church today. It doesn't matter if we have a lot of people, or I said, we're going to be faithful to whomever he sends. And so everyone started, you know, adopting that and saying, this is why we're here. And when we do that, the God factor of how people will come back, even though the place, you know, we didn't have electricity one day, someone stole the AC one day out of our church, like things happen. But the hospitality was so warm and genuine, people were like, okay with letting that go, right? And so we all want to be seen. We all want to be known. And there's just so many things in the Bible where when people come to the realization that the God of the universe actually sees me, like that's a crazy idea, even for someone who's known the Lord for so long. Like that blows me away every time. And so on a Sunday, our volunteers can be the eyes, hands, and feet that God will use to say, I see you. You know, that's that thing that happened to me my first time. I didn't know God, but there was something he was already doing in my life and in my heart and through these people to say, you're safe here. We see you. And so having strategic people, the right people, you know, Bart, I always tell churches, you don't necessarily need more volunteers. You need the right volunteers. Mm-hmm. And so I would tell my teams when we would try something new, I said, I'm happy to have 5 amazing on-mission volunteers than 20 people here to check the box. And so really creating that standard and that expectation of we're going to trust God with the few that we have. So when you talk about like what roles, we'll definitely have someone in the parking lot. Someone has actually driven into your environment. They can be anywhere. So first of all, they could be anywhere, and yet they chose to come to church. Mm-hmm. So let's affirm that. You know, we tell our parking people when Jesus says, come all who are weary, this is what you're doing. You're saying you're weary. Come on. Like we know parking is crazy town. I said, but it also speaks to the fact that we want God to be seen, not us. And so if we're focused on his people, his most prized possession, he will do what only he can do, right? So having someone strategically placed at the beginning and the end, I always add that part because we never want to do the bait and switch where we put all the stops out to have you in and the church is over and it's like a desert. Mm-hmm. It's like crickets. And now you're like, where did everybody go, right? So instilling that into your volunteers that we're here for the duration, because as God at the beginning, the end, we get to display that in how we serve others. So just a few strategic places in your church with intentional training about really seeing people, not going crazy over the top and grabbing them and, you know, oh, we're so glad you're here. Like you can go over the top with that as well.
What do you think? Okay. I love the parking lot. I love your story. I've had lots of conversations with lots of pastors about the parking lot because it truly is the first of all first impressions, right? What do you say to the pastor who says, well, I mean, we have 55 parking spaces and we only have 25 people coming right now. So why do I need someone in the parking lot?
Exactly. I used to hear that all the time too. Hey, Marianne, I said, you're not there to park people. That's not why we're out there. So we forget the why, right? So we're out there because why? I want a live, living human being that loves Jesus to make eye contact with someone to affirm them and let God do whatever he's going to do. And I would tell pastors, and I've been to churches, and at the end, I said, every church for the most part would say from the beginning, the pastor will go, and if you're new here today, we are so glad you're here. We have been, you know, expecting you, or we're, you know, all the things that they say to welcome. And I sit there and go, didn't feel like it. Like the words don't match the action. Now, am I hypersensitive about it? Because, yeah. But here's what I also know, Bart, is even if you're not, you have people that are ready to say, come on in. We're so glad you're here. Good morning. All the way through. And then they hear the pastor say something like that. God will remind them, it's true. We are glad you're here today. They may not connect the dots, but God will do the work. And I have 1,000 stories where people have shared. It's like, I was really angry and I really didn't want to be here, but I finally get them off my back. I thought, fine, I'll come one time. It was this college student. And he said, by the time I'm sitting down ready for the message, he goes, I couldn't help but smile. I did not want to smile. And so, that was hospitality. That's us ushering in. And when we think about all the places that God is willing to go for us, the mountaintop, the valley, the lowest of lows, the most random places, we seek, Lord, are you there? Why wouldn't we make ourselves available to be the wherever? So we say, Lord, as far as for me and my house, I'm going to serve you today. And if it's out here or there, you do what only you can do. We tend to boil everything down into the task, and we forget the fact that this is a ministry. That why would we go to Africa? We fly and we send missions to people in the most remote places, in these remote villages, and yet we won't even go 20 feet out into our parking lot. Like, I'm so passionate about this because it does speak the very first thing. And as I always say, and others as well, is the sermon starts in the parking lot.
Yeah.
So we need to make sure we match our actions with our words.
Yeah. If I gave the statistics, I'd be purely making them up so somebody can Google them or they can go to ChatGPT and search it. But the statistics, the research shows that most people actually make their decision about whether they're returning to your church long before they've heard the first song or the sermon has been preached.
Yep.
If they're 100%. Welcomed, they feel loved, they feel expected, it goes a long way to create a return guest, right? And that's the goal. Yep. The goal is to take the first-time guest, turn them into a second-time guest, turn them into a third-time guest, and eventually, if they don't yet know Jesus, introduce them to Jesus and then get them integrated into body life in your church. Beyond the parking lot, which I love the fact that your story starts in the parking lot, and I love that you place such a great emphasis on that, because I do think that is of all the first impressions, it is the lowest hanging fruit, okay? What beyond the parking lot attendant makes for great first impressions? Who else do I need to have on the team? What other posts or positions should I be considering?
Yeah, I think I would challenge churches to do a better job in identifying roles between greeting and ushering. Because in my mind, ushers ush, as I always say, whatever that means. That ushers aren't ushing, they're greeting at a door, which is fine. Let them be a greeter. Let them hand things out. But we want to have a consistent message throughout our church so that no matter where someone shows up, it's not just this area or this area. So having volunteers inside while people are waiting for the church to start, right? They're seating people or just walking around and greeting them and welcoming them and knowing over time who's new. And I would have my ushers know when someone was fairly new. We had a whole thing with our guides and they would say, hey, Marianne, there's a new family that's sitting over. And they would tell me where. I'm like, great, I'll go meet them. And it gave me an opportunity to just walk over before service start and go, hey, my name's Marianne. I'm so glad you're here. I hear you're visiting us today. If there's anything we can do to help you, I would love to help you. But you know what? Those volunteers know way more than me. I always put things on and they go, great. And they would ask about children and do you have a teen? And I'd find some youth volunteers. I'm like, oh, there's Sarah. Let me go get Sarah. And we were doing that before service even started. Because our volunteers inside the Auditorium Worship Center were connecting with people and creating that environment. So, so important and not really happening a lot, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think the takeaway on that, again, long time, established churches, people who've been attending the church for a really, really long time, it's intentionally taking moments both before and after the service to ensure that there are designated volunteers to connect with and engage with new people, not just amongst themselves, right? That tends to be when you're talking about a long time established church where people are, you know, they've been attending the same church for maybe decades. Their tendency is to, you know, they come in, they hang out with the people that they know, love, and trust. And newcomers are often welcomed, but it's often an awkward welcome because it requires people to kind of break up those long-time connection conversations and catching up with people, right? So, you know, you're not ever, it's unlikely for any pastor to ever be able to convince the entire congregation to greet and welcome new people. And that's okay, because really what you don't want is you don't want new people being mobbed by every person in the congregation. But if you have designated volunteers who say, hey, on this Sunday, my job, 15 minutes before the service starts and 10 minutes after it starts, is to be on the lookout for new people and to be their host, to be the person that rolls out the red carpet for them to make sure they get questions answered, that they feel seen and connected. And, you know, maybe your church only needs one of those people, or maybe you need five or 10, right? It just depends on the context of your church, the size of your space, the, you know, the size of your congregation. You know, our goal, our dream, our hope is that every church that's listening to this podcast and applying the principles that we teach here, we're not trying to take small churches and make them large churches, but we're trying to take churches that are maybe not as healthy as they could be and get them healthier. And I'm a firm believer that a healthy church is going to see some level of growth. You know, not every church is going to, you know, grow like your first church plant did there from, you know, 50 or 60 people to, you know, 5,000. But a church of 50 or 60 could grow to a church of 80 or 90, or a church of 120 could easily grow to be a church of 180 or 200. And a lot of that's going to come as a result of having an expectation that God is at work in people's lives and he's going to bring new people through your door, and you are anticipating that they're going to be there and you greet them, you welcome them, you love on them the way that they need to be loved.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the best word, expectation. I think one of the feedbacks I told a pastor, I said, it doesn't feel like anyone's expecting God to even show up. Like, it became so check the box.
Right.
Right. And so we have to expect. And here's the thing. I've talked with a lot of young leaders. They're like, man, they've left the church. You know what they want? They said, this is literally a quote. Like, look, Marianne, it doesn't have to be the best sermon. Everything you described earlier, doesn't have to be the best music. I just want to know that they're real. Mm-hmm. I want to know that they really love the Lord and they're going to give their all. It doesn't have to be perfect. And actually, I prefer something smaller. And so these churches have an incredible opportunity to reach this next generation by just doing some simple things to be authentic and say, no, we truly are going to put aside our preferences so that you know we're really here for you.
Yeah, that is very well said, and a great way for us to end this podcast, because we're at the end of our time limit here today. Marianne, if I'm a pastor or a church leader and I'm looking for some resources or some help in these particular areas, what do you have available? What kinds of things do you recommend for people to check out to kind of learn more about how they can implement great hospitality, great first impressions, or other volunteer things in their church?
Well, a couple of things. My website has some resources on it. It's just my name, MarianneSibley.com. And I do a lot of reels. I do a lot of talks on Instagram that talk about some best practices. So those are easy to check out, about leadership, volunteer sign up, invitation, not recruitment, that kind of thing. So, and then through that, you can find how to contact me. So it's pretty easy.
Okay, excellent. I will link to your website and to your socials in the show notes for this podcast episode. And that's MarianneSibley.com, you said, correct?
Correct.
Excellent. So if anybody had any follow-up, they wanted to check you out or get in touch with you, they can do that through your website. Any parting words of wisdom for our audience today before we close this one out?
You don't need more volunteers. You need the right volunteers. Just trust God. Like, just start with what you have.
Thank you, Marianne. Appreciate you. It's been great reconnecting with you again today. It's been a while since last time we talked. For those of you who made it all the way to the end of this podcast episode, congratulations. I want to remind you that we drop these episodes on the 1st and the 15th of every month, which is kind of an odd rhythm, and you won't ever remember that. So the best way for you to make sure that you don't miss any future episodes is to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts so that they automatically get delivered to your mobile device or to your YouTube channel whenever the episodes are available. So thanks again, Marianne. On behalf of everyone at the Assist Church Expansion team, I'm Bart Blair, and this has been another episode of the Revitalize My Church podcast.